I'm not going to lie, I struggled with this list so hard.
Which list?
Good point. The top five mixes list.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really struggled with it because, like, I just, yeah, it was hard.
So. I understand that. I had the same problem. What is...
Good start. Wow.
I started as I was wiping my mouth, here. And I'm like, ah, fuck, this is not good.
Oh,
we're rusty, okay?
No, I'm not even... I'm going to just keep talking. That is your intro now. I'm not even going to stop. I'm not going to give you a single place to cut unless you just keep going.
All right, that's good.
To be the intro to this one.
Yeah, fine. All right, we're joined by Malcolm Cottle. He's here. He's always a pain, but we seem to love him on the podcast. So, Malcolm, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it is my pleasure, especially with a kickoff that strong.
That's
tell you.
Absolutely fantastic. Okay, speaking of bad things, I have a thing that I did not add to our
seamless transition here.
Oh, 100%. We're recording this at the beginning, near the beginning of April, and it was recently April Fool's Day. Did you get caught by any audio companies or any like companies that did some April Fool joke that you actually kind of fell for?
I don't think I did, unless Waves is trying to like walk back their PR disaster over the last month by calling it an April Fool's joke.
Oh my God, no. They should, frankly, but...
Can you imagine if they tried that? That would be hilarious.
That would probably be a really good... Well, no.
Oh, wait, Wave Studio isn't a thing. We were kidding.
Just kidding.
Perpetual licenses forever. Like, yeah. Jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, they should.
I assume based on the question, you did?
I did, yeah. I had a couple that I fell for on music-related, and okay. I really fell for it, but the one music one... was on the Pro Tools Expert blog or Production mm-hmm. Expert blog or whatever. And they had an article about a new AI software company that had this new thing you could go buy, and it had figured out how to change subscription licenses to perpetual licenses, and this was a thing you could get, and they detailed out how it like tricks the server and like goes in like the licenses look for the subscription. It has this thing on the server that tells it yes, you own it, and so it's mm-hmm. just a perpetual license. And I started reading this going, how in the hell is this legal? Like, this can't, how, man, this, how is this even AI related? Why is this AI needed? And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. And I looked at the date and it's April 1st. I'm like, damn it. Yeah.
That's funny.
It got
kind of related.
Totally. Yeah.
Cool. Wow. That's funny.
The problem was, I was not really on the internet on April 1st. And then I saw it like a day later or 2 days later. And so I wasn't thinking that it was April mm-hmm. Fool's anymore. And I started reading it, like, God damn, this is wow. Like, that does not seem right. But like, if they're showing it, it can't be illegal.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, damn it.
Well, maybe it is. Yeah.
Maybe it is. So anyway. Yeah.
Well, speaking of April Fool's, the reason, yeah, I wasn't on the internet that day either because I was shooting a music video that day in Detroit with Fremont Pike.
Right.
And, but speaking of April Fool's, we had scheduled it for April 1st and then realized afterwards, like, oh, like, yeah, it's April 1st. That's funny. Should we do a bit? And we were like, no, because we need extras. So we actually tweeted that we needed extras for the video.
Yeah.
And we had to put in parentheses, like, not an April Fool's joke. And then we were like, wait, but like, we're known as like a band that does bits. So like, are people going to think this is a bit of a bit of a bit? Like how,
yeah.
Like,
how like Inception is this going to be?
So we were kind of considering the fact that we were going to have a real hard time getting extras for this music video on April 1st, because we just kind of figured, oh, everyone's just going to assume this is a bit.
Totally. I saw that tweet and was like, huh. You know, I'm not even near there that I could have begun, but I was like, yeah. Is this a, no, you know what? They would just not say it's a bit, and
if it
would
a
be a bit, but.
Or would we double down on the bit to say it's a bit so you don't think it's a bit, but it's really a bit, you know?
I know. I guess I had a little more faith in you guys, but.
we appreciate that.
Shouldn't have. yeah. So anyway, the next thing that I wanted to chat about was our Bad Habits cover. which I think is dope. Yeah, Malcolm did the drums on that and then pulled himself out of recovery and pushed himself and managed to film the video for it as well. So what you said, I sent you the mix and you're like, dude, how long do I have to be able to play this and film it to be in the video? I'm like, well, if you want to be in the video, I'll give you a week.
Yeah, you give me a week.
Oh, okay, I'm on it. Yeah, so well done on that.
Oh, thank you.
How is learning your pretty complicated parts on because you programmed it for the recording,
yes,
and then you had to try and learn that. And you programmed it when you couldn't play drums yet.
True, yeah. It was long enough ago that I was still in, like, full recovery. I hadn't touched a drum set in, like, 3 months, I think. Yeah, and I wasn't, like, supposed to for, like, another week, I think, when or, like, another couple of weeks. And
yeah.
I know, like, you know, this is for your kind of, like, your new challenges on your channel that you're rolling out monthly. So I knew I had, like, very limited time to do it. So the programming was easy. You know, I did it, I think, in an evening and sent it to you and you were like, yep, this is good. I'll roll with it. Because you are on such limited time. So like, yeah, when I programmed it, I had no intention or vision of playing those drums. Yeah. So it, when it came time, like, you know, you told the story very accurately. I programmed the drums, sent him off. I was like, cool. Maybe he'll send me a mix. Maybe I'll just see it posted.
Yeah.
And then you very excitedly were like, oh, man, you got to check this out. Like, this sounds amazing. And you sent me the mix. And I obviously, you know, checked it out. And yeah, like that's what it really came down to is it was so good. It like the mix went so hard. And it was just one of those things where like I could see the video in my head just listening to the mix, which to me is kind of always a good sign of a good mix. Is if I can see, if it makes me see things in my head,
yeah,
then it's a pretty good song or a pretty good mix. And so I was just like, you know, these drums go hard. This mix goes like harder than it really should. Like I want to be part of that release. Like I want my face on that too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I messaged you and I was like, how long do I realistically have to learn these drums? And I could like feel the hesitation behind the keyboard on your end of like, I mean, I'm hoping to, like, I got the, like, the tutorial side pretty much done, but, like, you got basically a week before I need to, like, have the rest of the video done. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try.
And then I would get periodic updates every few days. I think I've got it. I'm getting close. Like, don't,
it's sloppy, but it's there.
Yeah. Please don't release a video without me. I am working on this.
You said a week. You're giving me a week.
Yeah. And I'm taking that whole week because this is difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little like strangeness, obviously. And it was kind of challenging too, because like, I wanted to be able to play it well enough that like I could record it if I had to.
Right.
But I also know I didn't have to get it like note for note perfect because it was just going to be for the video. But at the same time, when you are doing video for drums, it's so obvious to me, I guess, and maybe this is a personal thing, but it's just like if you're playing the wrong cymbal, if you're hitting the wrong drum, like it's really hard to hide drums in a video when they're played wrong versus guitar. It's a lot easier because it's all the same place. Like you can basically played nonsense and as long as it like timing lined up it would be fine, but with drums that's just not the case. Like if you're hitting a tom when you're supposed to be hitting a snare, it looks wrong and there's a disconnect. So yeah, that was definitely a challenge to try to get it good enough that like it would be okay for a video, but also not like stress myself out to try to get it like record perfect.
yeah make it look right, but it doesn't have to like be the strongest hits and the most perfect performance sonically, but
exactly,
as long as it looks right.
Yeah, and like even as a video editor too, I didn't want to put you in the position of like, oh, like I have to cut around everything, you know what I mean? Or like the part that I wanted to have the drums, like a shot of the drums, I can't because it looks like crap.
Crap. Yeah, so, totally. Yeah. It's funny that you mention the having to have it accurate with the drums for the video, like if it's in the wrong cymbal. Because one, that is highlighted, like I think I notice it too, because we're music, like we make music.
And we make videos.
It's also going on my channel, which is aimed at people who make music. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be noticed by people actually kind of pulling
your
it apart in a way.
Yeah.
Like that's my audience. But it's funny because the lead guitar in that whole song, the lead guitarist version of me playing in that song, none of it's right.
Really?
Because I tuned the guitar differently when I recorded it.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was trying to learn it for the video, I'm like, I don't know what the heck I played, and I don't know where it is. So I was like, this looks like the pattern, but it's not on that pattern that I can actually consistently play is not the right notes with this tuning. So
wow.
I don't know what it is. So I just played, I just made it look good. No, you will never know by looking, because with guitars, you don't know how
GD
it's tuned.
Fraud.
Oh yeah. I do not care. I might not have even played it in the recording, honestly.
I spent a week, like, hour and a half on the drums every night to get every hit right. You're just playing whatever.
Oh yeah, 100%. Because I think there was one run where there's no. I didn't even play it in the recording. I edited it together because I'm like, funny. Ah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds good.
That's
but,
funny.
Yeah. So
yeah. I mean, yeah, that's just the reality of it, though.
We
like,
can't
that's
tell
the reality of the studio. That's the reality of videos. Like I always tell bands that I work with when I shoot music videos, I'm like, just make it look close to right. It doesn't need to be right. Like
no.
The performance is more important. So like, I'd rather see you look like you're having fun and jumping around than hitting every note precisely.
Yeah.
Just make sure you're in the right zone of the neck.
Yep.
And that you
exactly.
look like you're doing what you're trying to do. Like,
and that's the thing. If you're in the right zone, you don't know how the guitar is tuned. Because there's some stuff where you look at it and you're like, how is that? But it's like, it's a different tuned guitar. It's a totally new whatever.
Yeah, they used a capo in the studio just because,
there's
stuff like that too, where it's just like to get the sound you wanted, you know, you played an A chord, but with the capo on three so that like all the strings rung out
the right
so
way.
You didn't just use the top three strings or whatever and open tuning or whatever, you know, things like that.
Or layers where, too. Like,
yeah, or
what
like
layer
the amount,
are you
yeah.
actually playing in the video? Because there's about six
Great
layers
point.
Of different harmonies
mm-hmm.
in, you know, my productions. Like there's so many guitar parts that
Same
play
with vocals
together.
Too. Like,
exactly.
You know, like, and even with like vocals on videos too, I usually tell the vocalist, like just pick one and stick with it.
Exactly.
And then if we want, we can do a couple passes where you do like the ad libs or the other stuff, but like just pick kind of one main one and just stick with it throughout the video so that I have that at least consistently.
Yeah.
And then we'll just go back and do other ones if we feel like they're missing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's an interesting balance between the studio and the video part of it, isn't it?
Well, because they're both art, you know, and they're both supposed to represent the artist and their artistic vision and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, like it is a bit of a delicate balance of authentically portraying their vision, as we like to say.
Yeah, exactly.
and different things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But no, well done. Bad Habits. Kicks ass. I almost can't listen to the other versions now because of yours. Like it's that point where I'm just like, this goes so hard that it, like it went so much harder than the Ed Sheeran Bring Me the Horizon version. It went so it like, yeah, it just, it goes so hard.
As I started working on it, I started flipping back to the Ed Sheeran Bring Me version. And it was like, oh man, this is not as good as I thought it was, but mine is like way better. Like, this is what it should be. So that's why the intro of the video is like, this is the thing I wish it was.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, literally, this is what I wish they had done. But
yeah.
Anyway.
And I love those breakdown videos you're doing too. Those are fascinating, even for me too. Cause like I see it in early versions too, but it's so fun to just look under the hood and see all those layers and all that kind of production value behind it.
Yeah,
it's really, really cool.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And they're fun to make too. I'm figuring out how to pick apart different pieces of the songs and go, what's the important thing of this that would make a fun, not tutorial, but inside look of the track. So,
well, even the way you're putting the videos together now too is really cool. Like I love how you use like a little snippet of the song as the transition with a little clip of the video too.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, yeah, like the editing on it is really good. You've come a long way. I'm really impressed.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah, of course.
Speaking of music videos and the studio stuff, Holosyn, I think is how you say the name. Their video, you sent it to me, and Holosyn, however you say it. Also, I want to preface this with saying I do actually like Holosyn or whatever. I love the way they've done their covers. I think that they do really cool arrangements. But that it was Unholy, I believe, was the song, and the video goes so hard. It is so good, like so much like CGI or whatever effects and set design and everything, but the mix
costuming.
Yeah. But the mix is like, is it?
Yeah, and like I've never been like blown away by any of their mixes.
No.
And like for context too, like they produce exclusively pretty much for YouTube and Patreon.
Yep.
So like, and they're coming out with a cover of a song
once,
twice a month at minimum.
Yeah,
I think so. Like, it is like, I don't know what you call it, like fast fashion, but
yep,
for music, where it's
quick,
high volume turnaround. Yeah, and it's not meant to have like lasting power, because it's also a cover too.
Yeah.
So like, you know, people are gonna eat it up for a couple months and then they're probably gonna move on and
yep,
predominantly listen to the original. But yeah, in terms of their mixes, it just it was really just kind of thin,
yeah,
for me, and it didn't quite have the power that the video had.
No,
I guess I think that was the disconnect for me, is like the video had a lot of power behind it because they clearly filmed it on green screens, and then they had these like CGI churches that they were in with,
yeah,
like some like smoke and birds and all these kinds of things, and like lots of cuts and like camera movement with green screens too,
yeah,
which can be pretty expensive. Like they just clearly went very hard on the video and wanted
really
it to
hard
look good, and it looks really good, honestly.
Yeah.
Like it looks really good, but then to be paired up with this like great arrangement and these great performances, but then kind of a thin
mix.
I don't know. I don't want to be like too critical, but it was kind of just a thin bit of a lackluster mix,
yeah,
overall.
Yeah.
It was just a little disappointing.
It was cause it, the arrangement's really good. The parts are really good. The,
yeah,
the how they made like the song itself, the way they covered it, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like I loved
her vocal
it.
Performance is insane.
Oh. And you know what? Yeah. The vocals sound really good.
Yeah.
Of the whole mix, the vocals sound awesome. I really liked them.
And that,
the
I think
vocals,
again, was my shock too, is like, because to me it was like the drums sound really papery.
Yep.
And the guitar just didn't have any bite to it.
There was no body to it. Like, there was just no oomph to the guitars.
Yeah, which was surprising because it's a because they down-tuned for it, too.
Yeah.
Like, they're in, like, a down, like, seven-string tuning from what,
yeah,
it sounded like. That really kind of, like, genty, like, popular sound right now. But it just, like, it had no, like you said, oomph, no bite,
yeah,
no character.
Yeah, exactly. It was really interesting. Now, this is an interesting thought, because I feel like they have this kind of crops up here and there. Some of them are better mixed than others. And that kind of, as you said, like the fast fashion of these kind of YouTube cover bands,
mm-hmm,
because our last
we
night,
need a better term for that.
Yeah.
That we can coin.
Yeah. Well, we got to think of, if you think of any, leave it in the comments below.
And we'll steal it.
We'll steal it and then call it our own. No, we'll give you credit. Maybe.
We'll,
possibly.
No, we'll publish first. And
yeah.
And we'll just
exactly.
Get to it.
We got to think of something. No, but our last night has the same thing to me, where
absolutely,
their mixes,
yeah,
are very hit and miss.
Oh, okay.
And just like they do great arrangements. I love what,
mm-hmm,
they do, but I never have liked the sound of their mixes technically. Mm. Like I'm talking purely technical. I love the arrangements. They're a great band. But technically their mixes are like, I'm not going to listen to this a lot because it's just not pleasant for me.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
See, I find, because they're definitely in the same, like, cover genre,
yeah,
as Halloween. I think I will give more credit in that regard to Halloween, though, because their mixes tend to be a lot more diverse. They tend to tailor their mixes a lot,
yes,
more for their song, whereas I would find myself, my biggest criticism of our last night is all of their mixes sound the same.
I agree.
It sounds like they have like a template session set up, it's all ready to go, and they just plug in and play it through, and
yep,
like they're using the same samples every time, they're using the same,
yep,
guitar tones, everything is kind of like pre-figured out,
yeah,
which... Again, too, for like musical fast fashion makes a ton of sense, like,
yep,
that kind of workflow and everything like that, especially if you're trying to pump this stuff out. But I agree that it makes the mixes kind of sound a little boring to me.
Yeah.
They rely on a lot of the same arrangement techniques again and again,
yep,
and again, too, which I don't fault them for. It works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get millions of views on their stuff. So like I'm not here to criticize something that's working.
Yep.
But for me as a listener, I do find it a little repetitive.
Yeah. I listen
and
to
I think,
the songs I want to,
yeah,
hear, but I don't listen to all of them because I think, oh, what are they going to do with the song I don't really care about, but they're going to do something cool. I don't go,
mm-hmm,
that deep. I don't know.
Yeah. Unless I really know the song already so that I can kind of like more critically,
yeah,
A B it, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mentally,
I kind of have the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I agree with you. Holocene, I will give a little more credit to. They do just some more unique stuff in their own, for themselves, I guess.
Versus... It just seems like it. Like, they treat each one as, like, its own opportunity.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, Our Last Night just kind of assembly lines it a little bit.
They've been doing it for longer, too.
Yeah, they've been doing it for a long time. And again, too. Which, like, fair. And they do it well. Like,
they
I'm not saying
well.
They're bad at what no. they do at all. They're so good that they've found a way to kind of, like, you know, assembly line it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But I do find it gets a little repetitive for me as a listener, whereas Holocene seems to kind of approach each one individually with how they arrange it, how they produce it, everything like that.
And maybe
that's why for us... their Unholy mix was just a bit of a miss because it just didn't go through the same exact preset that they've been kind of using for everything else.
I don't know. It's interesting. I was recently talking to another friend of mine, and he was in LA doing a writing session with some guys, and he sent me the mix of this song that they did in one day.
Ooh.
And it is up there with one of the best, like, it's a phenomenal mix, and it's the guy's template that he then tweaks, obviously, but, like, here's the template, we're gonna plug the stuff in as we write it, and then pop out, and he sent it to me, and it's, like, the rough mix, and it's, like, this is...
rough with, like, big air quotes on
there. Now, to be fair, I guess I should admit, the guy who did it is Dan Lancaster, who is... he did Muse's mixes, 3 Days Grace mixes. He's in Muse now, I think, or touring with them. Anyway, so the guy knows what he's doing, but it's like you can set up a template and you have to put a lot of work into it, but it can be a very quick turnaround if you've set the thing up, if you've taken the time to set up something like that for that kind of thing and what your style is. And I think for both of these cover bands, they know what their sound is. So I feel like they could make their template sound better than it maybe does half the time, personally. I don't know.
I think that's a real, what you're touching on is kind of a real challenge, I think, for creatives, because like art is a capitalist commodity at the end of the day. You know, like, as much as we want art to be this kind of, like, superhuman thing, at the end of the day, it's treated as a commercial commodity, which is unfortunate. In that pursuit, I've noticed, and I've seen this in photography and videography, audio engineering and music production, that everyone kind of is always pushing you to find your little thing, you know, like how you brand yourself. Like, I've seen, like, you know, huge creators like Peter McKinnon have promoted this, the idea that you need to find, like, your category of photography.
Right.
He's kind of backpedaled that a little bit in recent years, but there was a time, like, he did a video of, like, find your style and, like, stick to it and promote it and, like, make your Instagram, back when Instagram was, like, actually kind of cool.
Yep.
make your Instagram grid, like, all kind of homogenous.
Yeah.
So that it acted almost as your portfolio. It presented, like, your style. And there was this real push over the last, like, decade, I want to say, of, like, everyone in the arts really pushing, like, find your one thing and just be the best at that.
Yeah.
And don't color outside the lines, so to speak. And don't, like, you know, if you do wedding videography, that's what you do.
Right.
Don't say you do weddings and music videos, because those aren't compatible.
You know,
those don't go together. They don't look good in a portfolio together. And, like, kind of all this kind of thing. And I think a lot of people took that really to heart.
Yeah.
And like I said, I feel like I've seen it across all industries, like, designers, tattoo artists, videographers, graphic designers, audio engineers, you are a rock engineer, so you do rock. So don't, like, you know, leave the hip hop guys to their hip hop. You know?
Yeah.
And I guess I don't vibe with that idea anymore at all. And in that, and the reason I'm kind of bringing this up is because you've brought up this, like, template idea, but, like, clearly a template that it's just there to kind of streamline the workflow, not the creative flow.
Yes.
And to me, that's what's really essential there is, like, you know, because for a while, everyone was saying, like, set up your template so that, like, you just have the things you like ready to go. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. But then all your stuff sounds the same because you're using the same, like, amp sims or whatever, or the same patches. It's like, and I think for a while it was in that pursuit of, like, just because you need to be great at what you do and you need to distinguish yourself as I am blank.
Yeah.
But I think you've brought up a great example of how like a really great producer can use a template just to cut down their workflow and not cut down their creative flow. And maybe that's what we're kind of talking about with like bands like Our Last Night, who again, like no hate to, their stuff sounds great. They're very talented musicians, but I think there is a slight breakdown of the creative flow because of their workflow fix. And I think, you know, there's just ways to figure out how to make your workflow better without sacrificing creativity.
And I think too, if you can optimize or improve or whatever you want to say,
We love optimization.
Absolutely. your workflow part of it allows for more creativity because you now aren't bogged down by routing tracks or finding the instrument that you know you want anyway to get started with what chords. Like, I always use this low octave piano thing that every single time, and I always throw the same plugin on it to start because I like that sound to get the chords for the song down. Like, what are my bass chords? What's the structure of the song? Like, I use it all the time. And so it's like it's in the writing template because I know now all I have to do is open it up and hit the record button on that track and I'm good to go versus, oh, I have an idea. Okay, let me import the track and let me put the plugin on. I don't have to do any of that kind of stuff. And I think that it's using a template as these, you know, like this guy that does amazing work, it's a mental shift of the template is not the end. The template is the start. So the template gets you somewhere and you can delete half your template and go, well, I'm not doing that. Or I change the amp sims or I change the drum sounds, but I need a drum kit to get my idea down to start. So I'm going to start
there. Kit that you know where everything is. So you're never hunting like, oh, where's that left cymbal? Where's the bell? Like, it's just the thing, you know, so that you can just go faster.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it leaves more room for creativity for you to then change stuff, which you have to know, I am going to change stuff. This is not like, this is the perfect mix. I have to leave it all. That's not what it is at all. And it should never be that. It should be this enables me to have it sound good right out of the gate, yes, but it's an open field of creativity to do what I want with it and not constrain me. It should not constrain you at all. You should do more with it and know you're going to do that.
Yeah, don't make the template a box. You know?
No, exactly. Think outside the box, even though you're in the box.
That was such a nerdy
A nerdy joke. Okay. Oh, man.
Did you just make an outboard gear joke?
I did. Had to. You know, I've been saving up on that for a while, I think. It had to come out at some point.
Been ruminating on that one, eh?
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Speaking of nerdy stuff, let's go move along after that beautiful joke. Something that you and I have been talking about a lot is our top five mixes. And of course, this is nerdy, so it works perfectly. But what you asked me, oh man, a while ago, what are your top five mixes? And I said,
I
you know,
this like 4 months ago. And every time I see you, you've told me, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Like, I haven't forgotten. I'm still working on the list.
And it is. I had a note in the top of my notes app that was like pinned there of top mixes. So I decided that you're never going to have the top five purely like, these are my favorite mixes of all time. I don't think it's possible, because even throughout this, I would add more and then I go, I don't know about that one anymore. Maybe this. So I don't think it's possible, but I have some definite go-tos and reasons why they're my go-tos references or for things that I really am inspired by from them and just general, I love them as mixes. So I decided finally, you know what, let's discuss it because I feel like I'm ready. so I told you to do the same thing and to get your top five mixes. So let's how do you want to do this? You want to go bottom to top and just go back and forth or?
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, I'll be honest, I had less time to work on mine.
True.
So mine isn't necessarily in any order.
Oh, okay.
I just picked five that I felt strongly about.
Okay. Mine are a bit, there's five question. I feel strongly about, but they're in a kind of an order, maybe?
Are yours albums or songs? Just out of curiosity. Okay. See, that was the other thing I was really struggling with is I would find an album that I thought like as a group was mixed really well, but then I found it very hard to pick a song that like to me represented the whole album.
Right.
But at the same time, I feel like that's okay too, because a lot of mixing is mixing albums.
Yeah.
Especially for some of the older, better mixes. Like they didn't mix singles very
nearly much.
Much
as the whole they do
album.
Now. Yeah.
No, exactly. So I think it's a little bit different now. So most of mine are albums now.
Okay. All
with
right.
Like so, a song that's a good example
yeah.
of what I like about it, but most of mine are albums, I will say.
All right. Well, go why don't you kick this off? Mm-hmm. You don't have to do an order. I'm going to do mine in an order, but what's one of your top 5 favorite mixes or albums or whatever?
Yeah. And I will say, too, like, I found this quite difficult because, like, I kept thinking of, like, songs I like, but those aren't necessarily the best mixes. They're just really good songs.
Yes.
That's what makes this so difficult.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a philosophical element of it, too, of, like, well, if you love the song so much, is it because the mix is good and, like, you don't notice it or whatever? But
or are you overlooking the mix because you think the song's good?
Meanwhile, yeah. Or is like, or do you know the song is good because the mix did its job?
Yeah.
Because sometimes mixing and editing, too, is kind of like... you know, like the better it is, the less you notice it.
Yes.
Because it just does its
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely.
You know, there's that whole part of the conversation too. So,
yep.
All right. Enough stalling, Malcolm. Just say something. All right. I'll go 5-1 just because that's how I had it. And
okay.
I think that probably it was ended up how my brain works. So my first one is Jay-Z's The Black Album.
Oh.
99 Problems.
Okay.
I think in terms of like hip hop, it really broke a lot of ground in terms of the sound that hip hop was allowed to have. It's such a dirty track. I love the whole album because some of the album just has some of that like just that wonderful early 2000s nostalgia like hip hop sound. You know, it's very smooth, very creamy. But then you have 99 Problems that is so gritty and dirty. Like the drums are so compressed to hell, you know? And like it's just got this really really nice sound. So I did look up the notes on it too. It was mixed by Andrew Sheps, produced by the Rick Rubin, and I actually caught a little after I put it on the list. I don't know, like the tech gods were listening to me, because a video showed up on TikTok of Sheps discussing 99 Problems and how basically he didn't really do anything to it. The only thing he really did to it was compression, a little bit of EQ, and then he throws a pretty aggressive filter on Jay-Z's voice when he's doing the little bit with the being pulled over by the cop.
Yep.
So to distinguish his voice from the cop's voice, because Jay-Z in the original version does both. So they just threw a filter on the cop version of Jay-Z just to kind of distinguish the voices a little bit. But he said that was basically it. Everything else was pretty much captured like the way it was captured off the floor.
Interesting.
So, yep. And so that, you know, and I don't know if that speaks to necessarily Rick Rubin's producing or because, again, too, it had like 10 engineers listed on it. So I wasn't going to list all of those out. But
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, he said he didn't do too much to it in the mix. All those source sounds basically came to him sounding like that. And he just a little bit of compression for glue, a little bit of EQ for clarity of the right things at the right time. And that's basically it. So yeah, I'm starting with Jay-Z, The Black Album as a whole. I think it's a great album. But 99 Problems definitely sticks out to me as just like, it's just, you know, you still have that like vocal clarity on the vocals from hip hop, because hip hop really obviously prioritizes the vocals really coming through with a lot of clarity. But like the track as a whole is just dirty and nasty and clanky.
Yeah.
In all the best ways, like all in the intentional best kind of ways. So, yeah, I'd say that's going to be on my top 5.
Interesting. OK, I just want to say one thing to that as a point.
I'm not taking any comments at this time.
Too bad. No. Got a comment. you say, you know, oh, Andrew Sheps didn't do much and whatever. And he says that, whatever.
He says that, yeah.
But that is the sign of a great mixer to know when
to
not
know when
to
not
screw
to.
It up. And that frankly, a little bit of EQ and a little bit of compression is what you should do. And you don't need to do more than that. That is mixing. That is literally mixing.
Mm-hmm.
Really. I mean, people now mix a lot where it's more creative mixing and they're doing more stuff to it. But if it's well produced and that's what it is, he's a great mixer and knows when not to do too much. So I just want to point that out, that
no,
that is a sign
right.
of an amazing mixer too. Like
mm-hmm.
don't
he saw,
undercredit
like, these source. Yeah. Like these source materials are great. they don't need to be revised.
I don't need to do anything.
I just need to make them work together.
Exactly.
With a little bit of compression and a little bit of EQ, these things can all sit together well. And they do. You listen to that sound, like, everything about that song, as dirty as it is, sounds so intentional.
Yeah.
Like, that's how everything is supposed to sound in that track.
Yeah, exactly. So, well produced and well mixed. Well mixed. I don't think he should get undercredited for that. So,
Hear, hear.
Yes. All right. My number five for me is... this was a tough one. And the band is Billy Talent, which you know there's going to be a Billy Talent thing on here because I'm hugely influenced by Billy Talent.
Yep.
I could not...
I wasn't sure if it was going to make it to the mix list for you, though, because every time you talk about those records, you mainly talk about, like, the recording process and the editing.
Yes.
That's the that's the thing you tend to talk about most, so I wasn't sure if it was going to make your list, but I had my suspicions.
It's I talk about that, but the editing of it and the recording of it lends to a really good mix. The mixes are so clean and so, like, everything's got its place. It's not over the top. Every section has its sound that's there for guitar. Like, and the last few records have been produced by the guitar player. So it's like, yeah, of course it's the guitars sound amazing, but regardless, they just really sound good. Now I did have trouble picking, what song,
because you got so many albums to pick from.
So many albums, and they just all, they're really Billy Talent sound, so it's like, oh, man. Mm-hmm. But I would have to go with either Reckless Paradise or Forgiveness One. Those two are just the guitar sounds. Like, it's Devil in a Midnight Mass, but better mixed. It's like the best of their layering and their harmonies and the the intentional different sections of guitar parts, and just so the dynamics, which I talk about in my latest mixed breakdown video, they do those things to a T so well in the production and in the mix. It is mixed by I don't know which. Who, like, they kind of have mixers on their records, and I'm not sure. It's either CLA, who I think did Reckless Paradise, and Rich Costey, who did Forgiveness 1 and 2.
Okay.
But I don't 100% know. I have a CLA or Rich, because the credits aren't totally clear. It's either one of those two, who are both amazing mixers. so, yeah, that's my top. That's my fifth pick. Back to you. What's number four?
Yeah, this one I struggled with a lot. So for the longest time, I was literally until like a couple days ago, because I re-listened to some of the records. This slot I had for Sum 41. I knew that much. Sum 41 had to be in there. And I was going to put Does This Look Infected, something from Does This Look Infected.
Yeah.
And I was listening to it a lot, and because honestly, the guitar tones are just phenomenal.
They're great.
Just like the guitar tones on that record are so gosh darn good. Like, they just, they crunch, they have like weight and heaviness to them, and like the chugs, like every chug comes out in perfect tone, and which is really important for that band too, because they have such like a Metallica and Judas Priest influence, so they love like putting that in. But the more I listen to it, the more I realize that the drums actually kind of suck on that record. They're really well played, but they don't sound that good.
Yep.
And if you just go to the next record, you have almost the exact same guitar tones, but with much better drums.
Yep.
So, you know, in honor of our host, my fourth slot goes to Sum 41, Chuck. Chuck's album. Yeah.
That's a great sounding record.
And honestly, I can't pick a song. I guess if you made me pick a song, I'd say No Reason. But again, too, like I think
it's a dynamic record. If you want
to learn about mixing, you have to listen to the whole record, because you got pieces, you got, you know, you have some ballads, you have some heavier tracks, you have some poppier tracks, like, and it delivers every single time to me, that record. The guitar tones are perfect on that record. Like, if I could get rock guitars to sound like that, I'm in heaven. Like I said, I think the drums sound much better in that record than they do the previous one. the drums aren't perfect to me, but they do what they're supposed to do. Like they come out when they're supposed to come out. The toms sound really nice, actually. Like all the tom runs in that record sound really, really good. I could use just a little bit more attack from the kick, but like semantics. I think the bass sounds really good in that record too. Like the bass is really well mixed, and they give some opportunity for the bass to take a little bit more of a prominent role every now and then, which I really love. The vocals are so upfront, so aggressive. You know, they're really just in your face that whole time without sounding like overdone too. You know what I mean? Because some people want that sound, and so they just like nuke the compression. And then like, and then you get all those mouth sounds and the little, like you can hear when breaths are cut off or left in and stuff like that. And you just don't have that. You have the full aggression without any of the incidentals. And there's a lot of other just stuff going on in the background that if you really pay attention, you can hear, but it's not distracting. Like the whole album sounds like the band playing. But there's tons of other pieces of production going on in the background. Keyboards, synths, all types of stuff. And yeah, and like just just the guitar solos just freaking rip.
Oh my God.
They sound so good. And like, it's like, how do you get rhythm guitars that sound that good and the lead guitar just rips through them? You know? It's just, it's so well done. So my fourth place goes to Sum 41's album Chuck. It was produced by Greg Norrie and of course mixed by the great Andy Wallace.
Interesting. If we go for nostalgia, does this look infected as my favorite? One of my favorites of all time. But
in terms of like songs I'm gonna sing along with, 100%. I think the mixes are definitively better on Chuck.
And I'm glad you stuck a Sum 41 thing in there, because I did not, even though Sum 41 is a huge influence to me. But in that same vein, funny enough, number four for me is by 4 Years Strong. Stuck in the Middle. It's Some Way, Shape, or Form. It was mixed by Dan Korneff. Such a just clean... The guitar tones for me, those are some of my favorite guitar tones. That record and that song in specific are some of my favorite record guitar sounds. And I did get to work with David Bendith at one point, who's the producer of that record. And I asked him about the record, and the engineer, Brian, I was also working with him. And so I got to shoot the shit with them about that record. And they did Sepaternal with Bring Me, and anyway, they're amazing. They did Paranoid Riot. They did the Kings. And the guitars are, they did a Epiphone Les Paul style or Junior style Epiphone guitar, which is like a $200 guitar, and they put bare knuckle pickups in it, and that's the guitar for all the, or a chunk of the rhythms. And so when I was asking about them, I'm like, that's the, it's like, that's like a $400 or $500 setup. And that's your, that's the, like a big thing on the rhythm guitars. I'm like, what? So it shows you that's don't bonkers. Need a lot of money, but,
If you know what you're doing or you know what you're trying to do. You
exactly.
Know?
Like, exactly. But that, that record for me is just amazing. And I love the record as a record, and I love the sonic. Like it's one of the, a perfect match for me as a record and sonics and songs and the full record thing. So yeah, that's up there for me.
Wild.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah. So
that's a great little anecdote on top of it too, of just like, you know, like it's one of your favorites, but then also it's just like probably one of the cheapest you've ever heard of.
I know.
For someone that's worked in $1 million studios too, with like the best gear money can buy. One of your tops is just, you know, a starter Epiphone.
Literally.
With just some upgraded pickups, too. Upgraded pickups make a ton of sense, too. You know, because we've been talking about that a lot since you sent me that video of, like, where does tone come from, honestly, in the guitar. So, like, that makes a ton of sense. Huge. And I've been ruminating on that a lot. Because, like, I think every instrument has that, too. Like, I've believed that about drums for the longest time. It's really not about the shells. It's about the heads and how you tune them, you know?
So much about how you tune them in relation to the shells, but it's so much how you tune them.
Yeah, but I think you can make any drum sound good.
Yeah.
With the right heads and the right tuning. I think like yes, it's easier to tune better quality shells, and you can get, like, you know, those, like, cream of the cream sounds.
Yeah.
But, like, I think you can make any drum sound good with good tuning and proper, like, heads attached to it, whether it's 8-lug, 10-lug, 20-lug, whatever.
Yep.
And I say this, too, because I'm currently building a tour kit of, like, smaller drums that I've just kind of collected, and they're all different. So, like, it's made out of an 18-inch bass drum that I, like, literally bought for $90 and have been refurbishing to make it look cooler. And then a 10-inch maple decade pearl tom and a 14-inch shine birch, I think.
Yeah.
Shine birch floor tom. So it's like a tiny little kit, but, like, it's sounding pretty good, I think. I don't
know.
Like, I'm not the best drum tuner out there, but, like, I know what I like and I know what I want, so I can get about that far.
All right. Where are we? Number three for you. What's next?
All right. So this one's a different one, because it's one I've just been obsessed with lately, and I know you know about this one. Halsey is a very interesting artist, and she did a stripped down version of her song Eyes Closed.
Yep.
And it's, from what I can tell, it was just like in a parking garage. She did like a series of these. She did a bunch of her songs, like, quote, stripped down in these, like, different places. Sometimes she had, like, some other artists with her. Now, Eyes Closed is like a full pop production song. If you listen to the original, like, it's, you know, your typical full production pop song is the best way I can describe it. But this this Eyes Closed stripped down thing she did, she's in like from what I can tell, like a parking garage.
Okay.
And then surrounded by like all these candles and lights and like chandeliers. Like it's a really, really pretty setup, but that's not really the point of this. And then so it's just her. She's singing into an SM7B, and then she's got like a hollow body Gretsch guitar from what I can tell.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of like, she's not even like full on playing it. She's kind of just like plucking the chords in the verses. And then she kind of like lightly strums just with her fingers in the choruses. And then you can hear a hint of like a synth that's kind of layered in, probably in post, I would assume.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's just gorgeous. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. Like, it just sounds so good. Like, whoever mixed it really just knew what they were doing in terms of using complex effects creatively and without getting in the way, because it never feels like her voice is washed out or that the guitar is too washed out. Like, it's just like, it's very airy and atmospheric and behind her. Like, it sounds like you get to hear her and then you get to hear this like parking garage that she's in, but it's clearly all the effects, like delays and different reverbs that they have like patched in behind her essentially. And it's just phenomenal. It's just one of the best things I've ever heard. And it feels so intimate and it feels professional without feeling like overproduced too.
Yep.
Like it checks all those boxes for me, man. And the fact that it's like, I don't know how live it actually was. I don't know how many takes they did. Based on the video has like some pretty significant cuts. So I'm going to assume it was something of a comp. Because it doesn't appear to be like it's strictly on a grid or even to a metronome. Like, she feels pretty fluid with the time. But yeah, it's just something I stumbled across on YouTube one day, a few years ago, and I've just been obsessed with it ever since. Like, I just think it's so well done. It's so gorgeous. The set design, the videography is phenomenal, but like, that mix is like, that mix was so on point. Like, it just did it so well. It makes her sound so beautiful without sounding, overdone, you know what I mean? And just everything is, and like I said, all the effects feel like behind her to support the and create an atmosphere. They don't sound like, you know, okay, let's put a room reverb on her and just crank it to 1,000, you know, all the way wet, you know, like none of that kind of stuff. It's just super well done.
Okay.
One of my top fives. I scoured the internet, could not find any credits on it. There's no credits on the video for who did it, anything like that. Nothing else on the internet could I find of who produced it, mixed it, engineered it. Nothing.
Can we just say that should be added to all videos?
Like, what?
We've had this discussion many times, and I think there's even a whole other podcast about this, but I just want to reiterate, please add your bloody music credits to videos, because there's a list that's a mile long of the people that worked on the video, but not the audio. Come on. Anyway, interesting mix. I've heard it. I agree. And I think it also highlights the Andrew Shep style thing where they knew where not to screw it up. So that's a great mix.
Simple, I really
but
think
it's good.
Just,
you know,
it's just effervescent.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. Number three for me is Jason Richardson.
Ah.
Tendonitis.
Really? Okay.
I love that mix. It is so well crafted. The dynamics for such a song that's just on full tilt the whole time.
So production wise, instrumental mix too. There's no vocals. No vocals at all. It's just guitar, drums, and probably programmed or played bass. But yeah,
yeah.
No vocals.
No vocals. It's so dynamically so well done. And part of this, honestly, is probably the production as well. Obviously, but it just sonically mixed is just so well balanced. It shows you what you want to hear when they want you to hear it. And like the effects and the glitchy guitars and the way that the parts are crafted. So like a section can have the same riff for 30 seconds, but every time sonically it changes to something, there's like a few notes that are glitched out or that are centered and then wide and then not, and then wide. It's just so and then it changes to the next thing, and then it doesn't feel like it's a formula that just is repeated. It feels like just, you don't know what's happening. Even though I've heard it a million times, I'm like, oh, I forgot about that part. That's so good. So to me, that is like an amazingly crafted creative mix. Sonically, it's balanced well. Yeah. So that's, I was shocked when that one kept sneaking up my list, but I was like,
yeah,
I can't deny it. It's just, I love that mix. I think you can
remind
right.
me the name of the mixer. I can see him. I can see his face. I can't.
Here's the thing. Can't find it.
No way.
I could not find. I think it's the guy that
did one and two.
Did one and two, but I could not actually find a legitimate credit for that. If you Google it and find it in 2 seconds, then I'm gonna be some kind of pissed. But who is
Taylor Larson?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Taylor. I know you're probably not listening to this, but yes.
Mad respect. Sorry for forgetting your name.
Yeah. He's amazing. I follow him too. Like, he's so good.
Yeah. I follow him on Instagram.
He's been
too,
doing some really good, cause he's doing all the new Falling in Reverse stuff too.
He's been busy he's too. Been yeah. Busy. They've had him on, URM a yep. lot too, to do yep. courses and stuff. So,
all right. Number two, Malcolm, what is your number two?
All right. So, yeah, number two, I decided to go with Periphery, specifically Periphery 3, Select Difficulty. That's the record. If I had to pull out a song, I would probably go with Loon. I think it's like the second to last song on the record.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, mixed by the incredible Adam Nolly Get Good. Oh. And then engineered by Nolly and Misha. So usually how they do their records is like Misha will record all of the guitars.
Yep.
He'll kind of engineer all the guitar recording, and then they'll send everything to Nolly. And then Nolly is still pretty hands-on with, he engineers the drums and then mixes everything. This, I believe, was the last record that Nolly was on as the official bass player, too. He left the band after this record. So on this one, he's still like playing bass and like in the record. I mean, he still plays bass on all the new records, too, but
he's not officially in the band anymore.
He's not officially in the band. Yeah, but he still produces the records and everything like that. So, so mixed and produced by Adam Nolly Get Good. Just, I don't know, it's just phenomenal. Yeah. I just think it's a great record. A really great example of, like, you just hear everything that you're supposed to hear when you're supposed to hear it. The tones, I think, are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And Loon really sticks out to me because, like, the drums are just incredible on Loon. Like, every little ghost note you get to hear, and just the way Nolly mixes drums, I just really, really appreciate, because like Nolly's doing drums for like everybody too. Like, he does obviously anything that Matt Halpern is on, I think Nolly does the drums. Like, even when Matt Halpern went to like Sweetwater to do a session for them to promote some of his new gear, like they sent it back to Nolly to mix.
Totally. Yeah. No.
If he does a Meinl session, Nolly mixes it. I think Nolly's also pretty involved with Craig Reynolds. So he does a lot of stuff with him. And just phenomenal. Like, the man just knows drums. He just can make drums sound absolutely incredible. Obviously, Nolly Get Good is the namesake for Get Good Drums. So they've made lots of libraries, and they all sound phenomenal. So the man just gets drums. So as a drum record, I really get psyched on this record because the drums sound so good, because you can just hear all of the perfect articulations.
Yeah.
All the little subtle things. And he really strikes a really nice balance between using samples to make things sound big, but then not over sampling things so that they sound fake.
Yeah.
Like, his drums just never sound fake, even when he is using samples. They never sound fake. They never sound artificial or yep. anything like that. And you just get all that power and you can just tell the drummer is still the drummer. I mean, yep. anyone that says that like samples or time alignment ruins the drummer's feel or the drummer's character, I encourage them to check out Nolly mixes because yes. I don't see it. Like if yeah. you know what you're doing and you're doing it well, Nolly retains that that drummer feel and that drummer style very yes. very well. So Loon I think is a great highlight from that record, but overall Periphery 3 Select Difficulty, I think all that right. that record is mixed very well.
I also want to just highlight too, it is a really good mix, but also there is something about Matt Halpern's crafting of the drum parts that you can mm-hmm. hear everything because his parts don't compete with everything.
That's true. And he's really good at highlighting the right accents. Spot.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's one of my favorite things is when like the guitars are kind of hitting all these accents. He's always hitting those accents with cymbals, like a big array of cymbals.
Yes.
It's really, really cool.
Which yeah. makes the guitar sound better, but it also makes the drum sound better because mm-hmm. everything's impacting. Because you can have an amazing sounding drum kit, but if it's trying to do a drum solo while the guitar's doing a guitar solo and the bass yeah. is trying to play up high, none of them are going to sound good, no matter how well you mix the drums.
True.
So there is a big part of how Halpern crafts his drums on that record as well. And the guitar part, like every part of that record
yeah,
contributes to a really good mix that's possible. Yeah. So yeah, I agree. Good choice. All right.
Thank you.
Number two for me, you knew this was coming, is 3 Days Grace.
Yeah.
So-Called Life, which is okay. off their latest record.
That was another of it was going to be which one,
not yes.
which
not,
artist.
Not, yeah, exactly.
Not what artist, which song, yeah.
Yeah, so So-Called Life is their first single off of their latest record, Explosions, and Dan Lancaster mixed it. Mm-hmm. He crushes it. He did the Muse record. He did the Explosions record. He's just so good. And the biggest thing for me is in the drums, the snare is not on top, but sounds so good mm-hmm. and just cuts. And I know that's partially Neil's playing as well, because Neil does rim shots literally all the time, even on soft stuff. And I know this because I work with him. And so I can confirm. But yeah, it's just the whole thing just sounds so good. And the creative dynamics that are created in the production as well as the mix. I mean, part of it is the production. It's produced by Howard Benson. Just the way that they craft like the beginning of it for prime example is the shots at the beginning of the song. Each time the shots happen, they change, even though they're still the same shots. So you have the synth that's doing the bam, 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 and then the guitars come in, and the first one's like really big, and then it like drops out, and then it kind of builds back up. And like that is crafted in the mix and the production as to what layers are there, synth-wise, guitar-wise, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, it just really good, not huge harmonies, which is something I definitely like, mm-hmm. but yet just enough. And Matt's vocal is like right there and is huge when it has to be huge, even though it doesn't sound like it's layered to oblivion.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's like that is that's a good mix.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah,
cool.
So-Called Life, 3 Days Grace is number two for me. So just a great song and a great first single comeback yeah. single for them. So
and that's hard too, because like 3 Days Grace is definitely one of those bands where just like they've never sounded bad.
No.
You know what
no.
I mean? Like I don't think there's anything I've ever heard a 3 Days Grace single, because I don't listen to them a ton. Like I've
right.
never really done a deep dive into their discography, but in terms of their singles, like yeah, they always sound just like top-notch rock records. Like yeah, like
yeah,
that's what you should be shooting for if you're doing rock, you know.
Yes.
Like we have some friends that are in rock bands, and I think it's safe to say that that's what they want to sound like, you
yeah
know?
Literally
like at the end of the day. So
even from their first record, they were on like the cutting edge of production. So mm-hmm. the production of their first record is that like they were breaking ground with how to edit and how to do all that stuff, and that's part of their sound. And mm-hmm. So it definitely, I think it keeps going, and I think they still push that, which is great. So anyway, yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan of 3 Days Grace in general. But that mix is definitely on the top of my list, or second top of my list. So, yeah. Speaking of which, Malcolm, sick. First number one mix, what's your pick here?
I went with my gut on this one, 'cause this is the one that, like, when you asked me, it came up first in my mind.
Okay.
And so I kind of just rolled with it. Again, I don't think these are actually technically in order.
Yep.
But this is the first one I wrote down, and this is the first one I kind of stuck with. The Devil Wears Prada, Zombie EP, Escape.
Yeah, I knew it. And, I was waiting for the Devil Wears Prada in this list.
I figured you were, yeah. Yeah, I think this is almost just more a little out of nostalgia than technically it's the best mix I've ever heard. But, like, you know, recorded, mixed, and mastered by Joey Sturgis and produced as well. To me, this was kind of like Joey Sturgis at his prime. Like, yeah. I think this is the best thing I've ever heard out of him. And that's not like a slight to any work he's done thereafter, obviously. I just think it's like it hit all the boxes at the right level.
Yep. The band hit the right boxes, and
I think the band were, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's and again, too, another good example of I had a really hard time actually picking a song to go with. But the reason I picked Escape was because there's some post-production in it that's just phenomenal that, like, when we heard it, it blew our minds.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it shattered our reality, and we were obsessed with this. So, long story short, basically, the whole album is about, you know, zombies. And they're like getting up to, like, they're kind of doing, the band's doing a build up to a breakdown, and then at the breakdown you hear this big, like, shotgun just like cock, and then, like, they fire the shotgun at the downbeat of the breakdown there. And it's just awesome. Like, yeah, shoot a gun and that kicks off a breakdown. Hell yeah. But that's not where it ends. Like, that's not where that's not really the magic of that mix. The magic of the mix is they do the breakdown, and then they kind of, there's this, like, really kind of like they kind of do a build up, and then they have this real, like, open thuddy kind of section where it's just like these really low tuned droning guitars, like, and the drums are kind of like starting to hype a little bit, and you hear this shotgun shell perfectly. It falls and hits the ground and trickles away, and you hear it perfectly.
Perfect.
Like, it cuts through this dense mix, and you just hear the shotgun shell hit the ground and roll away.
Yeah,
perfectly. Yeah, it just blew my mind. So yeah, I love that EP. I think it's just phenomenal. I think that's particularly a great song. I think the post-production is just perfect on that record. Like, it's just enough that it emphasizes kind of the story and the atmosphere without being, like, so in your face about it. And I feel like a lot of modern productions listen to this record from Joey and then, like, kind of, like, took it to the 10th degree after that, where it's just too much, where it's almost like the post-production is taking over the song.
Yep.
And I don't feel like it, and I feel like this is a good album where it's like, yeah, that's about as far as you should take it.
Exactly.
It's a very just clean record too. Like, there's a lot of the sonic energy in this record is really in the mids, like the upper mids and the lower mids. It doesn't have a ton of low end on it for something from Joey Sturgis, and it doesn't have a ton of top end either, but, like, all of the mid information on this record is just really solid. It's really dialed in. Everything is really gluing really nicely, and it's not like a muddy mix because everything's in the mids. It's actually really clean and really focused because the mids are so well treated, I think, across every instrument. And again, too, like, the drums are, like, sampled and time aligned, but they just sound good. They sound like drums. They don't sound like, you know, 2x4s being smacked together.
That's true.
In a factory, you know, the way they tend to. And, you know, like, I think there is some of that sampling in there, but it's always, like, in the breakdown when it should be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As opposed to, like, throughout the whole freaking track.
Yeah.
Guitars sound great. They really just, they sound heavy when they need to sound heavy, and the riffs pop through. The synth sounds good. The vocals sound great. No notes.
Yeah. Agreed.
it's a great EP. It really, it just checks all of my boxes. And it's just really well done. I really, really like it. And I love going back to it, too. Yeah. And honestly, Zombie EP2 is also really great.
Yeah.
It's very different, though. Like, I almost don't find them comparable because of the approach was so different
totally.
For both of them. So, yeah, it's just this, like, moment in time, this, like, weird little EP they came out with, like, right after they came out with Roots Above and Branches Below,
yep.
right? Which
yep.
was like really poppy. Like that was a really poppy record, and they kind of got like criticized for it.
Then they turned, and
then they
zombie.
Like turned around and went like Zombie EP, which is like heavy as balls.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just interesting.
Yeah, no, I
but
agree.
Great record.
Great record. Great mix. Yeah,
phenomenal mix.
I yeah. love it. All right, number one for me,
dun, 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 dun.
Is Bring Me the Horizon.
Oh.
Dear Diary.
Okay. Yep.
Which was not a single. It's the first song on the Posthuman record.
Yeah.
Mixed by Zach Cervini.
Uh-huh.
And it is just, it's so fast. So, it's definitely a combination of the mix is phenomenal and the mm-hmm. writing and production is phenomenal. That okay. whole record mm-hmm. has phenomenal production on it. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I definitely... distinctly, like I compared it to the rest of the record mm-hmm. and it's that mix to me is the best mix on the record too.
Okay.
Like, I forget what the song they did with Youngblood and, Ludens and all the, like mm-hmm. some of those other songs. No, Ludens wasn't on that one. Anyway, just
yeah,
doesn't compare. Doesn't, it's not the same. This Dear Diary is so clean and mm-hmm. heavy and, like the guitar tones are phenomenal, and it's even though it's like so fast, like it's they're really bringing back some of their like olden day,
yeah,
the throwbacks a little bit. It's still like you don't feel the energy lack, even though the it does have dynamics, but yet yeah. it never gets boring. It never goes down. The way that he crafts like the full vocal, the vocal level is just perfect, even though it mm-hmm. goes to like. Literally probably a voice note of Ollie screaming at the dog, like off
yeah.
mic, but yet it's right there and you get the whole vibe of him screaming at the dog off mic, like the dog's over there. It sounds correct, not mm-hmm. staged, not mm-hmm. Like, oh, that'd be funny. Like it sounds exactly how it should, which to me is a phenomenal mix, whether they recreated it and put it in, whether it literally is a thing that happened and they're like, oh fuck, let's put it in. But it just, the whole thing is really well done in that regard for the entirety of the song just mm-hmm. smacks the whole time. And this was one of the first ones when you asked me about my top five mixes, that was one that came to mind. And then
okay.
the whole time I was like trying to dethrone it. And I couldn't do it. I was like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, it literally might be one of the best mixes to me. So, yeah, that
cool.
one.
Very cool.
That tops my list. So,
I love it. You know, honestly, I kind of had the same thing with Zombie EP too, where like that was the one that kind of just like shot right to the front.
Yeah.
And I assumed I'd find something else that would be better. But like,
yeah.
it kind of just stays in my memory in terms of. And that's so funny too, because like, you know, certain mixes, like you love them because of the dirt and the grime on them that
yep.
like just kind of like give it so much personality. And then some you're just like, this is so clean and perfect. Like I can just hear what I'm supposed to hear and I love it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
That's
those are the top
list.
Five mixes. I agree. I think we both have a good list. I will yeah. say I do want to, I have, cause it was so tough. Some, honorary
honorable
mentions. Yeah. which we don't have to like really talk about too in deep, but I just want to mention them because God damn, mm-hmm. NF, any NF mix mm-hmm. on the latest record, the new singles he's putting out and on The Search, those two records, phenomenal. Tommy Prophet produced it and I believe mixed it. I don't know. Unbelievable crafting of production. And I'm not a huge rap person, but NF is one of my favorite artists,
cool.
despite that. So yeah, NF, Muse, Euphoria, which was also Dan Lancaster, is a phenomenal mix. Same thing with the snare. It's just like, oh my God, how did you do that? Nickelback, This Means War or Coin for the Ferryman, which is CLA or Randy Staub. I don't know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Like Nickelback. Is
I was kind of expecting you to have a Nickelback.
I thought I would. I honestly thought
five.
I would.
Yeah.
But the whole mix is not as good as I thought. Like, pieces of them are really good, and songwriting, they're really good. Production-wise, they're really good. But if it's really, really good production-wise, then I'm like, the mix isn't as good as I thought it would be, or the drums aren't as, are just lacking a bit, or I don't know, something. But Nickelback has to be in the honorary mentions because their records just sound phenomenal.
Yeah.
Alter Bridge is another one where it just sounds so good.
Okay.
But couldn't, and that's Michael Basket, who is a, oh my God, such a good mixer. And then the last two are by, I think, the same producer, which is Body Bag by I Prevail or My World by Avoid.
Okay.
That's so good. So good. So good. Those are my, those, I just had to mention the honorary mentions there. Cause of course, like Nickelback, you can't have a top five rock mix and not say Nickelback somewhere associated with it.
Yeah.
So awesome, man. Well, I think this has been honestly a great conversation.
Yeah. No, this was a really unique challenge, but it definitely gave my, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun to just kind of re-listen to all this stuff and then try to really determine, like, do I just really love this song or is this really a good
or is it a good mix? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's a good challenge. And I think, honestly, I would put this challenge out to anybody. Because referencing mixes when you're mixing is a good thing, and I reference these quite a bit when I'm mixing as well. And knowing what mixes you really like and actually comparing them to other mixes, because there were some that I would listen to, and I'm like, ah, that's a great mix, and then I'd put it up next to like Dear Diary, and I'd be like, man, this sounds like trash, actually. But on its own, it sounds really good. But when you actually really look at deep into it, it's like, not as good as I thought. So yeah. I think it's a good challenge, and just to kind of know your basis of what you enjoy, what you like, what you're looking for. So when you're mixing, even if it's a different genre, you just know where the top end sits, where the bottom end sits, where the crunch sits, all that kind of stuff. So I put that challenge to anybody for what your top five mixes are, with some honorable mentions is okay. But yeah, awesome, man. That was really fun. We'll get you back on for a more nostalgic episode soon, because we have a fun rating game that I want to do. So we'll do that on another episode. But thank you for joining us here once again on this beautiful episode of Shooting the Shit with Anna Creates, I guess.
Cool. We're going out the way we came in, I see.
Oh yeah, this is, you know what, we're just gonna end it. Fuck, we're done. Call it end scene.
Cut.